Here's what I'd like to do now. We're going to do something we've never done before, and that is we're going to talk to some corporate executives and just kind of get some insight from them on what we can all do together, what they're doing, what they're seeing from the corporate side, and what we can do from our side. I think it'll be valuable for you. So please do me a favor and welcome to the stage Brian Underwood, Michael Hutchison, Armand Puyolt, Al Bala, Mark Wilson, and Justin Rose.
Hey, man.
All right, all right, all right. No playing favorites now. So, gentlemen, I appreciate you taking the time to be up here and kind of giving a corporate perspective. We don't normally do this, so it's kind of interesting. I think they might find it interesting to see what's really in your minds and what your kind of insight is moving forward. So I want to ask a question of each of you and have you each answer the same question if you'd like. And we'll see if any duplications happen inside of this. But Brian, let's start with you on, in your career in network marketing, Brian Underwood. In your career in network marketing, what changes have you seen?
You know, I've seen a ton of changes. I think the biggest change that I've seen, the main thing is, I think, still the main thing for companies that are going to have a long tail, that are going to be around for a while. It has to be rooted in relationships. However, I think that the speed at which people can connect through social platforms has obviously increased it. But I think that one of the things that I think could be almost self-sabotaging at some point within our industry is also the speed of expectation. When I got involved 27 years ago in the industry, it wasn't, you know, the expectation of generating $10, $20, $30,000 a month in 4 months or $100,000 a month in 6 months. You know, and I think that the internet has accelerated people's perception, not the reality of what someone has had to go through to get there. So I would think that one of the biggest things I think has shifted is leadership teaching real expectation, or as you were talking about yesterday, the leadership gap.
Yes.
And I think that's a big, big, big component that can make you or break you as you're developing an organization or a community.
And as he mentioned yesterday, we had a CEO summit or corporate mastermind event at our home with 30 or 40 executives kind of talking about how we can do better. That was the first one. It was very interesting to be able to have that conversation together. But same question for you, Michael. What changes have you seen? and let me just hold on. Let me just give credit, because I've got to tell you, Michael, 2 years ago, you had 20 people at this event. Last year, you had about 200. And this year, stand up if you're here, part of my... Well done. Okay, no songs. All right. We're happy you're all here. Congratulations. That's some pretty accelerated growth. But Michael, what changes have you seen?
So you and I grew up with Jim Rohn.
Yep.
Jim Rohn always said to attract others, you have to be attractive. And so what I see, the biggest change is transparency. The best way to be attractive to others is to be honest, to be straightforward, and to be transparent. That's the number one change that I see. And secondly, the business has always been around about leadership development and mentoring. And for me, it was trying to find out what was the right product, what was the compelling product that you were willing to put your name and reputation behind. And so the biggest the biggest change is just that need for training, leadership development, mentoring, which is why we're here to soak up your brilliance and to leverage the references, experiences of this amazing group of leaders.
Yeah, so we're happy to have you. It's our pleasure. Armand. All right. Don't make me throw you out. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot to say, for all the people who are watching on live stream, everybody, we have to say goodbye to live stream people. Everybody say bye, live stream. And this is only on the Facebook people. The other live stream people, stay here. For the people on Facebook, if you'd like to watch the rest of the thing, go to goprostream.com, I think. You can get a live stream ticket in order to be able to watch the rest. Hope you do. It's going to be great. Armand, throw it to you.
Sounds good. Well, the biggest difference, I think, in network marketing, because I've been in this deal almost 28 years now, the biggest change I've seen is just the manner of the way we are projecting the business. You know, a lot of people before, we used to project the money side. And now we're projecting what we do actually within the company, which people have to understand that we are, this industry here, no matter what company you're in, you're not in the money company. You're not in product company. You're in the people's company. So we have to understand that to get started. And the second thing I've noticed, a huge difference, and it's a major difference, is that 28 years ago, my team was 100% English. And nowadays, it's about 98% Latino. Si eres Latino, digan yo!
All right, Al Bala, same question for you, my friend.
Okay, well, I've been at it 39 years now. So, we call it a home-based business now. It used to be a garage-based business then, right? We were logistics, right? You earned every penny you made because you got the product, you shipped the product, and people came to your house, and you had calling nights, and you had pickup nights. It was hard. I think for everybody who's here, especially those of you who have been around just a few, a little bit of time, you got it so much easier. It's so much easier. The other thing I've seen over the years is we've gone from local to national to global. If I wanted to do national back then, I had to ship it in a bus because there was no UPS, there was no FedEx, there was nothing like that. So I think all those things have made it easier. Technology has made it easier. The reams of computer paper, the Tandy computer with a flop disk, you know, whatever. Now you got it all instantaneous. So for me, it's all come to the place where I really believe we have not yet scratched the scratch on the scratch of what this industry can do because of what we have today that we didn't have back then. So it's an exciting time to be in network marketing, that's for sure.
I agree. Mark Wilson.
You know, for me, I think, hey, look at that. I've got a crowd. For me, I think the biggest thing is we're entering into what I call a transformational era where everybody's worried about their transformation and how that impacts them in their lives. And this mixed with millennials and the new millennial attitude, which we love, because they think outside the box and they're a little crazy, and they're not traditional the way we used to think of the business. So I think it makes us rewrite the way we interact with our field, the way we do business, the way we offer our services to them in a whole new, young, fresh, vibrant way.
How many people here in the room are under 35? All right, pretty good. All right, Justin.
All right. Hey. So, thank you. Thanks, Mom. Thanks, Dad. I would actually have to say, being in the industry for 30 years, there was just so many there was fewer players. So we were, I feel like an even tighter niche group but very into our own companies, where I feel like, I agree with the panel, the speed over the past years has been incredible, and the cultures really identify the companies as much as the products and the opportunity. And so I feel like it's a much more cultural, rich industry than it was previous.
I love that. All right, let's come back to you, Brian. What do you love most about network marketing? If you could pick one thing, and it's your favorite thing, what would your favorite thing be? What do you love most?
I know this is going to sound cliche. The journey of it, the journey that it gives people to, I think, learn who they are. You know, it's like know thyself, be thyself. Most people don't ever take the time to know themselves. And I think great companies, they spend time helping people build the belief in what is possible for them. And so I think that it probably is a common theme for everybody in this room is the people side of it. It's the personal development side of it and the impact that we can have on the world. You know, the reason that I'm still in direct sales to this day, when I was in my 20s, it was all about the money. I was chasing it. I made a lot, lost a lot. You know, and I literally thought that I was it. All you had to do is ask me. Until I had a defining moment. And that defining moment was when a young lady came up to me and said, I've never had anybody speak to me that way. And I just remember the weight of that conversation with her, because as a young age, I was saying the right things, but inside I wasn't internalizing the power of words and the power that we can have on someone else's life, just by giving them hope, giving them a new level of awareness. And that's what this is. This is a platform. And doesn't matter what company you're in, there's a million incredible, great ways to make $1 million. But for me, it was about the fulfillment that you can get by helping shift the course of someone's life and the ripple effect that that can leave in the world. And so as cliche as that may sound, that's why I'm still here. That's why I'm passionate about what you're doing. I think it's probably symbiotic to what you lead
sure.
as well.
For sure. Michael, same question.
So I'd say, similar to Brian, the meaningful work, it's a struggle to be a business owner. It's the hardest thing that I've ever done. The struggle's real, and you have to communicate that it is real, and it's hard. But the rewards are also real. It's a challenge knowing that you have something that can add value, can create an impact in other people's lives, and yet people shoot you down and reject you, and you get negative feedback from people. So that struggle, adding to the meaningful work that you're doing, knowing that you're adding value and making an impact in other people's lives, is what I love, number one. And number two, the meaningful relationships. I'm here because of a relationship.
Yeah.
The relationship that you and I have.
Yeah, a long time.
And we have a bromance, right? I've got a bromance with this man. You'll have to translate that. But everybody loves a good love story. And so this business is about love. When you are in your heart and you're focused on helping and caring and contributing, you attract people. When you're focused on scarcity and need and my wants, you repel people and you're in your head. And so that ability to create meaningful relationships is what I love about the business.
Love it. Armand, how about you?
Well, one of the biggest reasons I love this industry is we give an opportunity to people who can't afford an opportunity. We are around the world. I've walked in lands where the homes, inside their homes, is still sand. We've done presentations where still the kids are sleeping on cold sand inside a house. And to me, you know, there's going to be a lot of seven-figure earners made within all these companies, yes. But to I think to the majority of us, the goal is to make sure that people around the world can afford to put food on the table, could come forward to bathe their kids, to put clothes on their kids, to put shoes on their kids, to take the kids to school. And, you know, to me, you have no idea how many people, when I fly to Peru, when I fly to Colombia, when I fly to Mexico, when I fly, you know, all over Latin America, when I fly to Africa, when I fly, you know, all over the world, you have no idea how many people this industry has touched and given an opportunity for them to feed their kids and not worry where money will come from.
Love it. Mr. Bala, what do you love about it?
Well, I believe that, I mean, for me, it's being able to live a life of significance. We all have to do something to earn a living. It's when you go to bed at night and you know that what you did today is going to really have an impact. And sometimes it's not just an impact to that person, but it's multi-generational. You change generations. You know, when I got my phone call 39 years ago, I was working in a factory for $1.65 an hour. That was my opportunity. And I think that's the beauty of this industry. It's a mechanism for you to be able to really maximize your God-given talents, even though you don't even know you have it. But the mechanism, the power of association, the power of the word, being able to create your own future, your own reality, because of that mechanism, because of that hope and the dream, that's what kind of keeps me jazzed up by this thing.
Awesome. Mark, how about you?
You know, for me, this is the greatest industry in the planet. There's nothing better than it. And I think it's because we remove limits. We take away all the limitations. And in life, we have so many limitations on us. And for me, this is the one industry where there are no limitations. You get to dream and do what you believe you can do. And I love what you said earlier when you said your check is a reflection. For me, that's the biggest thing we offer, is that hope and dream to remove limits.
Fantastic. Justin.
Yeah, I would just add to the group here. There's nothing like this room, right? We have a room full of very like-minded individuals. And in today's world, everything's being pushed to limit the ability for us to build relationships. It's becoming easier and faster. But when you walked into this room, did you not feel pretty good?
Yeah.
That good. You felt that good. That is what I'm talking about. We have an opportunity to bring like-minded people together and build something very, very special, because together we're better.
Awesome. So I want to ask you a question. I haven't prepared you for this question, but I have a kind of a unique view, because I work with organizations around the world. I've been in corporate and I've been in the field. And I've been kind of consulting and all these different types of spots. And here's what I know. The field has one opinion, and company usually has another opinion, not necessarily different-minded, but it's like, if the company hasn't been in the field, they can't really understand what the field people do, and if the field people haven't been in the company, they can't really understand what goes on inside the company, challenges inside the company. One thing I will tell everybody is every single company is a small town. It's just like a small town. And it doesn't take long to be the town idiot. You know what I mean? It doesn't take long to be the town jerk. We don't even understand, because sometimes as field leaders, we get frustrated. And sometimes rightly so. And we call and vent to somebody. But if we make Susie in customer service cry, that's going to get around that whole little small town that so-and-so made Susie in customer service cry, and it's going to affect reputations, and it's going to hurt feelings. Or sometimes we feel like, you know what? They say only put negative up, don't put negative down, so I'm going to send an email on a Friday afternoon to my CEO with everything I don't like about the company and ruin his weekend. A lot of people don't think that the CEOs aren't bothered by that stuff. But trust me, they lose sleep over it. Trust me, it's emotional for them too. But here's what I would like you guys to share. What is one thing that you wish the field in general would understand about what you're doing in corporate? What's one thing that you wish that they would just know and understand about you or your company? Anything?
You want me to go?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know. I think that we're very cognizant of that. And one of the things that I loved your analogy in the beginning. I come from a sports background, so I think that it's super important. You know, if I have a basketball coach, I find that the best coaches are the ones that know what it took to compete and to sacrifice. And We have one of our leaders that one of the first questions he asked me 4 years ago was, what is your goal or what is your intention or outcome with the culture and the community? And I said, this is a tall, tall order. And, you know, some people might not agree with it, but I said, the one thing that I really wish and hope we can be great stewards of, and if we can keep this as the intention, is that there is no divide between corporate and the field, because by nature, that's a conflict. You're conflicting with your team. I said, we all just play different roles. You know, the thing about a lot of times, you know, someone that might be on this panel is they don't have the luxury or the privilege, unless they just don't take the weight of the responsibility, to say, you know what, I'm just going to take off for the next 60 days. I'm done, right? Because if they do that, there's a lot of people's livelihoods that are on the line that they carry a lot of weight, a lot of responsibility. And my father told me a long time ago that the true definition of an entrepreneur is when someone else's livelihood is based and predicated on the decisions that you're making. And so I think that the one thing that we really want to foster within our culture and is that, listen, we're not going to be perfect as a company. I can promise you that. And what we're asking you all to do is just be a part of it with us. So everything that we do, we try to get buy-in from top-level leadership and to where there is, like you said, true transparency. And, you know, our goal is we're going to make mistakes. And our goal is to make mistakes because we don't want to be afraid to make mistakes. And we just don't want to make the same mistake twice. We want to constantly get better. And so I think that would probably be the message that I would send to everyone in the room is have an ownership awareness. You know, it's not the company, it's your company. And take that ownership to heart. And because everyone here carries a lot of weight, a lot of responsibility, and I can tell you that they genuinely care about you. And so I think that you're very fortunate, you know, with a lot of companies to have people that truly care like that.
Yeah, that's great. Michael.
Awesome. I think that everything that we do in corporate is to make what you have attractive and to protect you. And so we operate from mutual trust and respect. And so I use this metaphor that we're both mamas and papas. We have to love each other. We have to love our field. We have to love those people that send us the emails at, you know, 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon. We have to love on everybody. And we have to protect. We have to protect like a papa, like a father, like a grandfather. And that's my role, and that's your role. And so that's the second thing I would say. And then the third thing I would just say is that we're in this together. I mean, that's it. We're in this together. And it's not I go, it's we go. And ego is the voice of fear. And we've not done anything in our history to create distrust and just respect that. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Love that.
Yeah. Well, let me just first start by saying that when I was on the field, you know, as a top earner of many companies, one of the things that I noticed was it was a very easy life. It was a life where I could go recruit, be on the beach, you know, recruit, be at a party, recruit, be somewhere else, working, doing meetings. That's fantastic. Corporate-wise, now, we are like 24/7 grinding every night, and I bet you every single person in this panel right now, they don't sleep as much as, I mean, I sleep 3 hours a day if we're lucky, but the reason for that is that we want to make sure that you guys have the tools and you guys have a company in the future. See, one of the things that you don't understand as a distributor that I want you to understand is that, let's just say our company or anybody's company here, we have every single life. I feel I have every single life and family on my shoulders. And if I fail, I fail millions of, well, actually thousands and thousands of people and people they can serve. So we stay up every single night making sure that every error is fixed, everything is that, and we do get the calls. But guess what? We have to draw a line where we can say, okay, this is valid and this is not, because we want to make sure that you have a future here within these companies that your grandkids can have a great life, that your great-grandkids can have a great life. So you have to understand one thing. This is what we're growing is not just a business, it's a family. And if you can understand that, just that little bit, you can defend it like it was your own, like it is your own, and defend it with everything you can, because every time you jab at it, you're destroying a brick that is holding up the fort, that is holding up these companies up in the air.
Love that. Mr. Bala.
Well, for me, I spent 28 years in the field, and I've been in corporate for 11. And the only reason I went corporate is because I wanted an opportunity to build the company I would want to be an associate of or a distributor of. And so to answer your question, the one thing I would want the field to know is that we are here to really protect your legacy, which means at times we have to make the tough decisions, the tough love, the mama, papa love you were talking about, but we need to do that in order to protect your legacy, because you don't have to, you know, look around too much to figure out that when people have not done that, they've destroyed the legacy. And sometimes they've done it trying to be nice to you, but in being nice to you, they actually undermined your future and the future of your future generations. So if there was one thing I want the field to know is that we're here to protect that legacy. Even at times, it's not going to be the kind of things you want to hear, but at the end of the day, it's what's going to make it work. And eventually, one day, you will thank us for those decisions we made, because that's what we had to do in order to make sure that this thing would stay along, it would stay around for a long, long time.
Excellent. Mark.
Well, our number one job is to earn your trust and then keep it. And I think in so doing, my advice to you would be with your company, don't jump to conclusions. Don't start judging until you have all the facts, and make sure you get those and that you go direct, because sometimes we can write terrible stories and we can create all kinds of scenarios in our mind to find out that when we really get down to the facts, that isn't the situation, and it can damage your career, it can damage your team. And we need to be careful about that, especially as leaders. Leaders in your company, you need to be careful to make sure that you first have that trust of the field and that you use that and respect it with caution. Because as you do that, everyone's looking to you as you become a great leader and you're under that microscope with them. And most of the time you'll find the company is not intentionally doing anything to harm you. They really are trying to do the best thing that they think is right at that moment. And when you find that out, it'll change everything for you. So just don't jump to those conclusions and love them the way they want to love you.
Love that. Justin.
Yeah, just we'll add on to what you've already heard. But, you know, I've worked with some great companies. And, you know, I've worked with a company that's been around for 60 plus years now. And, you know, when you've been around that long as a company, you've ran into situations where there's been an erosion of trust. And the hardest thing for me was when you were trying to do the right thing, but the field sometimes looked at it as a takeaway, if you will. And in all honesty, that's where I think the most important piece is to separate, is that as a company, we're working our best to make sure that we're making the right decisions. Do we always make the right decision? No, sometimes we make the wrong decision, but we learn from it. And I think the one thing that I've learned is to really keep your field engaged and involved every step of the way. And we do our best to do that and continue to do that to make sure that when those decisions are made, there's an understanding. I think the worst decision is a decision that's made and communicated very poorly. It's very important to make sure that you're in step with your field leadership. And I think that's probably the one thing I just want to make people understand, that it's for the good. And in the regulatory environment that we live in right now, I know a lot of those conversations that are happening behind the scenes and decisions being made, people are thinking that it's not in the right direction. But in actuality, what's happening right now is going to make us stronger. It's going to make us better. And I feel like it's good for everyone.
See, the reason, and give them a round of applause. The reason, you might be wondering, why are we having this conversation? Because I think knowledge is power. Understanding what your role is, understanding what corporate's role is, all of this builds belief, overall belief in the ability to present this to others in a way with conviction, to be able to know the partnership that exists here, to be able to know the relationship that exists here. It's really important to be able to kind of understand this. And part of GoPro Recruiting Mastery is building that belief, building that vision, so you go out with more conviction. So I've got one more question for each of you, same question. But before I do that, has anybody noticed Armand's shoes? Check those shoes out, man. Those shoes are fancy. Red bottoms. Wow. Fancy shoes. The shoe cam. And look at Brian's shoes. Brian's are like, where look at those. The look at those things. All right. One more question. We'll start here again. And kind of a combined question. What opportunities do you see in the future, and what can field leaders do to help to capture those opportunities?
As an industry or?
Just in general.
I mean, I think the first and foremost thing that you just said that I think is important to reiterate is we talk about three pillars of belief, and one of the things that I love about what you do is if someone comes here, I say that your success is going to be based and predicated on a three-legged stool, right? Your belief in yourself, your belief in the company that you're with, and the belief in our industry. If any one of those things wavers, that stool is going to fall, and you're going to sabotage your own ability to succeed. And you can only build something to the level that you believe it can be built. And so I think the opportunities in the future are for you to constantly reinforce your belief. You have to have faith in which direction you're going, right? People have faith in those that have faith in other people. So the one thing I can promise each and every one of you is that stay relevant, stay in front, and stay focused on what you can give, not what you can get. The reality of it is that I don't care what compensation plan you're working with, what company you're working with, if you're going to do something long-term, right, not here today, gone tomorrow, in terms of what you're going to create from a legacy perspective for yourself and for others, you're going to get rewarded directly and indirectly for the value that you're bringing to other people. So I think that, you know, the platforms are going to shift, the platforms are going to change. The opportunity, I think, is about continuing to focus on what value you have to give. And the more that you grow, the more you have to give, the more you have to contribute. And by the way, you're going to find the more that you're going to accumulate in that process. Not just financially, but I think also fulfillment. So I hope that answered your question.
Totally. Michael.
The biggest opportunity is to transform lives, to improve lives, to make life better for your fellow man. That there's nothing greater than to know that you've added value, you've created a measurable impact in the quality of somebody's life. And so that's the biggest opportunity that we all have. The opportunity to enable somebody to be a business owner, in my mind, is the best opportunity to create financial independence. And so that's number one, is the ability to impact, to transform, to improve, to make life better for other people. There's nothing better than being able to save somebody money and to be able to put money in their pocket. That's number one. Number two, the thing I'd like to see the field do more of, the standard of virtue, in my mind, the difference of a standard of virtue is a virtue is what you do. What you do is who you are. And what we've asked our team to do, simple suggestion, is to ask permission. Do I have your permission? May I tell you about my business? And if they say no, say fantastic. And if they say yes, fantastic. But whether you're online or offline, make sure that you ask permission to proceed. And if you don't have permission, then you don't have the right to enter their world, and so respect that. So that's what I would want our team and the industry to take a stand and a virtue. Yeah.
Love that.
Well, one thing that, you know, I see is that there's a lot of people that are hungry. And I'm not talking about just hungry for to do something, but hungry, actually hungry, like they need to eat around the world. And to be honest with you, this opportunity gives you the best opportunity to show somebody how to fish instead of handing them fishes. For example, here's one of the deals that, you know, that people have told me. He goes, Armand, you've made so much money. Okay, why not just hand, you know, a couple $1 million to this organization so they can feed all these kids in Africa, or they can feed all these kids in Latin America? Well, here's the deal, my friends. I'd rather come in and make sure that you guys have the tools to show every single person that you can touch how to build an income, even if it's just a few dollars a week. It doesn't matter if it's a few dollars a day, but guess what? That is life-changing money. That is money that you are going to change people. And the more people you change, the more money you will make.
Love it. Yeah.
All right. Well, in the last 10 years, 59 million Americans joined the gig economy. Today, 59 million Americans are involved in a gig economy. That's 40% of working Americans are involved in some kind of gig. There's no, yeah, and it's kind of clear why. They're not making enough money, they're not living a life of significance, and they're not having the experiences that we provide in our industry. In the next 5 years, and this is just from studies that are being made by scholars, this is a scholarly research paper that's done. The next 5 years, another 40%, that's over 100 million Americans. We're talking, and I know this is an international group, and I think you can expand that to any country in the world. 100 million Americans, one of the richest countries in the world, 100 million Americans are going to be involved in some kind of a gig. For how much? $500 to $1,500. Not millions, not six figure. They want $500 to $1,500 a month, which is the absolute sweet spot for our industry. What we got to do, what we all have to do together, and this is why this event is so amazing, because you give us the tools, you give us the platform to be able to do this, is we need to go back and talk to more people than we've ever talked to, because they're obviously looking. Nobody wakes up one day in the morning and says, I want to be an Uber driver, right? Oh, I'm just going to use my car, go drive people around. People don't just do that. They do that because they want freedom and flexibility. Guys, we were the original gig economy. We're the ultimate gig opportunity. So why not just go out and really start sharing that? But this is what you need to do. Don't overhype it. It doesn't have to be hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. $500 to $1,500 a month will change people's lives in this country, and you can bet around the world. So if we don't overhype the opportunity, and we are very clear about what it takes to do it, and then we provide them the tools and the technology to do that, folks, we are going to have such a renaissance of this industry when everybody thinks we're not relevant. Well, we're probably the most relevant thing that's ever been in the history of the world. The greatest migration of people from the E quadrant to the B quadrant is happening right now as we sit right here. So let's go get them.
Love it. Mark.
Oh. You know, for me, it's about, we talk about transformation, and you need to become the most attractive ambassadors for this industry that the world has ever seen. We need to go out there and be unstoppable in our attitudes, in everything that we do, so that people see how attractive this industry is, that they become fans. And you're a little crazy about this. We need to get a little crazy. We need to become those raving fans so that people are curious what we're doing and want to be part of this, rather than be embarrassed about it. And I think that's one of the greatest things we can do, is to change the image of this industry, to show people this is the greatest industry, which you all know, you're here. We just need to do a better job of sharing that with the world so that they see this is life-changing. This is transformational. This removes the barriers for the average individual and gives them the opportunity they've always dreamed of.
Love that. Justin.
Yeah, the greatest opportunity is really going to continue to be the opportunity and what you do with that opportunity. I see, as technology comes and starts playing a bigger and bigger role in what we do and how we do it, it goes back to how important it is. The relationships that you build and establish through this space is greater than anywhere else. And so what you do with that and how you add upon that is going to continue to really separate us from what's happening in the world today. And just to build on what Armand was talking about, what you do with your success and how you build your organizations and how you participate in bigger adventures and helping other people is really what we're going to be known for.
Love that. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a lot of different corporate executives, corporate employees and executives here at this event. If you are involved in a corporation on a corporate side, would you please stand up so we can honor you? Take a look around. These corporate people coming here, checking this out. I think that's amazing. Ladies and gentlemen, please do me a favor and give a big round of applause for Mr. Brian Underwood, Michael Hutchison, Armand Puyol, Al Bala, Mark Wilson, and Justin Rose.